This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Yes, and this is Doug Pollard welcoming you to another magazine of news and current affairs. Now, as you heard, we have a special guest this evening. According to the Herald Sun, he isn't campaigning, he's just coasting. Well, they don't just have the charm that myself and my producer have, because former state Liberal leader and mayoral candidate Robert Doyle is coasting into the Rainbow Report studio. Now, Centrelink are making some changes to the way they treat same-sex couples on benefits, and they wanted to know how to tell the gay community all about this. And I'm happy to say Centrelink spokesperson Henk Jongen has taken up the invitation to speak on this issue on the show tonight. The changes to benefits are resulting from all the reforms that are happening in Canberra at the moment. The Senate agreed to amend superannuation laws to allow same-sex couples to leave entitlements to their partner or child when they die. Very generous of them. It also debated a bill to extend the meaning of de facto partner, child and parent so as to include same-sex relationships in 68 Commonwealth laws. Well, Corey Olam's up there in Canberra, and he'll be bringing us a report. Meanwhile, the indomitable Kay Sirrah will be peering beneath her bonnet once again at another kind of election, just a small election, this one. The rapidly approaching Also Awards, honouring members of our own community. And last, but by no means least, the proprietor of DT's Hotel, Dale Smedley, is standing for Yarra Council. That's in the Melba ward. Is he going to be peach Melba or burnt Melba toast, do you think? In just a moment, we'll ask him how his campaign is going. And I say we, because to give me a hand, I have with me in the studio Scott Bradford. Good evening, Scott.
Good evening, Douglas.
And we're hoping to have Ron Thiel. We hope he manages to get here before the show finishes. Well, last week we heard how Tom McFeely from the Peel Hotel was moved to stand for his local council on a whim, while accompanying the landlord of DT's Hotel to pick up his nomination papers. That was Dale Smedley. Hello, Dale. How are you?
Good, thanks, Doug. Good, and yourself?
Oh, very well, thanks. This sounds like a sort of gay pub political party forming up here. Do you and Tom have similar ideas?
No, actually, no, not really. We're a bit disappointed, really, because the Yarra leader just did a story on both of us, which came out today, and neither of us are actually sitting on a gay ticket, but the leader used that as an excuse to write the the article, which was a bit disappointing, really, because it's not what we wanted, you know. Although we're born gay.
Doesn't mean you have to have the same political opinions.
Well, no, that's right, and as we said to her, or I said to her, actually, you know, if you're going to make sort of gay, well, you have to declare that the other chap's heterosexual and the other lady likes dogs, and I mean, you know what I mean?
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, I'm not saying there is, but you know, it doesn't make you make the better decisions on council just because of it, you know?
Do you think perhaps maybe she brought it up as to get a negative sway on the article?
Well, I think she just wanted to get really just a bit of a story out, to be honest with you. And
you can't deny that, you know, it is going to be something that the straight press will pick up on. Hey, two gay publicans running in the same city, that is new. Speaking as a reporter myself, that is newsworthy in itself, even if you don't agree on anything else.
Well, I suppose because we just sort of, we don't think that's really an issue, you know?
Well, that
to us, it's just passe, and what we're doing, although Tom did it sort of on a bit of a whim, but he's really gathered a lot of strength now, and he's starting to get into it in the true spirit that it's meant, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I nominated the last time, and I sort of pulled the pin a bit at the last minute, because I wanted to help the general, all the community, you know, but I didn't quite have my act together. In the last 4 years, I've listened to a lot of people that you walk past on the street or stop when you're, you know, sweeping out the front of the hotel, and they just tell you what their their whinges or their gripes are, or, you know, what their interests are. And I've picked up all that stuff, and it's, I mean, it's not riveting, but it's just everyday people thinking, well, you know, it's upsetting us a bit here, a bit there, and...
Yeah. Let's get off this whole thing about, you know, the fact that you're a gay publican.
Yeah,
we all know
sure.
that. Not of interest.
Yep.
What platform are you standing on? What policies are you putting forward?
Really just mainly just stuff that affects the everyday person around this area. Things like cleanliness, safety, trying to sort of, say if you want to build a pergola in your backyard for perhaps your daughter or whatever's wedding, you know, you have to wait 9 months for it to be knocked back, you know. Things like that, you know. I'd like to see like an 8 items or less planning for locals who just want to have a little bit of a, you know, a build or something, you know. You
cutting
don't
want to
10
tape.
Stories or anything.
Yeah, cut back on the red tape a bit.
That's exactly right. Make a lot of the council people that work there, some of them aren't very user-friendly, just to re-educate them that, you know, the residents, the ratepayers are actually paying their wages, and therefore a little bit respect might be nice.
Now, Tom brought up a lot of things to do with things like, you know, bottle shops being allowed to open late and all that kind of thing. Are you following him on that line?
What he does is, you know, he's sort of more sort of out there than me with all that sort of stuff. I'm more sort of moderate, but as far as, I mean, I rang up the director of liquor licensing and I spoke to her personal secretary and said that my idea for the problem with alcohol in the evenings was if they shut the takeaway outlets at 11 o'clock, you'd find a lot of that violence would go away.
Yeah, because they've dropped this lockout thing now, haven't
well, that's
they?
That's right. It didn't work. And when people are drinking under supervision, it's fine. But when they can get booze from a takeaway, well, until the next day virtually, you know, they can sit in their cars, get rotten, and then go out and create problems, you know. So the venues themselves really haven't changed their mode of operation ever since venues have been venues. But the actual packaged alcohol shops on that, where they used to shut at whatever time they used to shut, now they don't shut at all. So, I mean, you can get kicked out of a club, go and get, you know, a bottle of Wild Turkey, drink it, and then shove it in someone's face, you know?
Yeah, but you're raising a very important point here, I think. I mean, you know, the sort of reality is that the sorts of crowds that go to the gay venues are much better behaved on average than
venues. Oh, look, I appreciate what you're saying, but unfortunately...
We've got something, you know, something to sort of contribute to that debate, I think, you know, because the sort of gay venue model is by and large a successful model for drinking.
Look, I couldn't agree more, but they take a blanket cover on the whole thing. They don't look at a separate venue. They just say, right, this is the problem. I don't care if you're gay or you're straight or whatever you are. This is how we do it, and that's all there is to it. And
yeah,
that
you've got something
is very
to
wrong.
Offer, though, I think. Look, I'll tell you what. I was in Townsville last Friday night.
Who am I talking to now?
Oh, that's Ron.
Ron Thiel. I'm a regular drinker at your place, as a matter of fact.
God bless you.
But look, I was in Townsville last Friday night.
Talk on, Ron, talk.
Army town, full of young blokes.
Yep.
1 o'clock on East Flinders Street, which is the main drag there,
yep,
is like the Wild West.
Yes.
You know, drunks, people breaking windows, people beating each other, totally and completely out of control.
Yep, total.
Never seen anything like it. And, you know, that sort of gay venue of responsible drinking and the gay publicans is something we can thank them for. I've got a lot to offer to that debate, I think.
Oh, look, I couldn't agree more, but then again, gay people don't really go out to have a fight or eyeball other people or create, you know, problems. They go out to actually enjoy themselves. And most of the trouble we have at the hotel here and even what Tom might have over the pier is normally two exes going at each other or, you know what I mean?
it's not really a hideous
fight. It's just, you know, boys will be boys.
Well, just on that kind of subject.
This is Scott Bradford talking to you now.
Yes, Scott.
There's quite a few Melbourne City hopefuls running on tickets of safety within the CBD. Now, you were mentioning before that you don't want to be brought up as a gay person as such, but do you think that there is an issue of safety in the Melbourne district?
Yes, actually I do, and having early lockouts is not the answer. As I said before, what you have to remember is people are quite happy, or they're good in a controlled alcoholic, you know, licensed atmosphere. The problems you get is when they get the booze elsewhere and they don't actually get into those venues. Mm. Now, I believe the King Street people, I've sat on the Yarra licensing forum for 13 years now. So, you know, I've been privy to a lot of information, and the King Street saga, all those venue owners and the council wanted the police to sort of get a caravan there years and years and years ago. And for some strange and remote reason, oh no, we can't do that. Now, they put it down to no manpower. But, you know, if there's a problem and there's people dying, you know, you find that. You find the resources and you find the manpower.
Yeah.
You know, and they've started to act now as all they need to do is become police again. You know, rather than, as I said to one licensing forum, actually the director of liquor licensing was there, Sue. And I said, years ago, you know, if you staggered down a street and a divvy van went past, they'd do a U-ey, and if you were drunk, they'd put you in the back and you'd be taken off and, you know, locked up and let out at 6 o'clock in the morning. But nowadays, you can go past a policeman with a syringe hanging out of your arm, and they just move you on. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the police need, I'm not saying they need to be more forceful, but they need to be police again. People don't respect them as much as what they used to, and this is what needs to happen, you know?
I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that, you know, thinking back to my younger days, the police are always in vehicles now. They're very seldom actually on foot.
Exactly,
I mean, they arrive and
yes,
they get
exactly.
out of a vehicle, but you don't see them patrolling around on foot in
no.
areas where there might be trouble, and I think that's a big deterrent for a lot
well,
of it,
well, I mean, we're very fortunate here. We're near the hotel. We've got the Commission Flats, which are, they in themselves are quite lovely, the people that live there, but it attracts a transient drug trade, and we get a lot of foot patrols by the police, and it really just works so well, you know?
Yep.
Just their presence is just delightful, and they chat to people. It's nice, you know?
Well, you know, they have to be part of the community. Well, thanks very much, Dale.
All
and
right.
Best of luck with your efforts.
Yeah, so well, actually, well, just while I've got you, a very interesting thing, too, is that I picked up my dry cleaning from Bridge Road, and the dry cleaner who I've been sort of associated with Richmond for 35 years, and the chap who owns the dry cleaning shop was out the front. He said, we've got about 6 freeholds. You know, there's about 12 votes there. We're going to vote for you. And then the son who was inside said, you know, we don't normally vote for council elections, and we're always Labor. He said, but this time we're going to vote for you. He said, because we're sick to death of the way they're doing everything.
Well,
so there's a little sort of someone on the street, you know, volunteering some information.
Well, I'm sure you've got lots of contacts out on the street, Dale. Anyway.
Vote one, Dale.
Yeah. All right.
Now,
that's
can we all say that together?
Yes, all right. That's enough. Come on. The other people standing in this election too, you know. Okay, Dale, thanks very much for your time tonight.
All the very best.
And the best of luck.
Lovely, thank you.
That was Dale Smedley there, the proprietor of DT's Hotel, probably one of the oldest established gay bars in the city, I would have thought.
Indeed.
Well, yeah, it's been around for, what, 13 years, 14 years or something?
I have no idea. It was here when I arrived, I know that. I think it predates me by quite a long way. You know, I understand he's got Molly Meldrum working on his campaign for him as well, so that should be interesting.
There you go.
I wonder if you're going to get any celebrity interviews.
Well, I know Molly tends to put the St Kilda football emblem up and the Melbourne Storm emblem up on his wall. I wonder if he'll have a big Dale Smedley picture on his wall as well.
Yeah, perhaps you could get photographs of Dale outside screenings of Brideshead Revisited, you know, in linen suit. He'd fit right in,
well,
wouldn't
probably
he?
Not, no.
Or maybe not.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. Many a political career has started the way Dale's is starting up, although he's left it a bit late for his run, on a local council, arguing over rubbish collections and streetlights, and they end up under political spotlights up in Canberra. I have a sneaking suspicion our next guest is trying to short-circuit this process because he spent such a lot of time up there already. On the line now we have Corey Earlham of the Australian Coalition for Equality.
Good night, guys. How are you?
I'm very well. How's your political ambitions?
Look, I don't harbour any political ambitions, to be honest with you. I'm quite happy doing what I'm doing, helping out the community in a small way.
All right. We'll put that on record, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
so, we've had some progress. Yes, up there?
We had great progress. Obviously, everybody's aware that on Monday, the Family Law Amendment Bill was finally passed in all of its various votes in the Parliament, which means that access to the family court for couples breaking up, it will be enacted shortly, probably about 1 March or 1 April next year. This means you won't have to spend quite so much money going through your state Supreme Court. You'll be able to use the Federal Family Court, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And also that also recognised couples if you have children as the parent of the child. So if you do break up, you'll be able to claim child support from your partner, which is fantastic also.
Now, that is now actually passed into law.
That's passed into law, just needs to receive royal assent, and the dates will be out and about for everybody to know when that will be once that's known to us.
Oh, I'm sure that's a mere formality.
It is. The other two bills, the superannuation and the general law reform bill, were debated in the Senate this week.
The so-called omnibus bill.
The omnibus bill, 68 pieces of legislation. Mm-hmm. So they were debated this week. The superannuation bill passed with the government's amendments and also the opposition's amendment. At the 11th hour, the opposition came out and said, well, our leader, Malcolm Turnbull, in the House of Reps said that you could backdate this, and we sent this off to a committee, which caused it to be delayed. So we're going to move a motion that says public superannuation funds will be effective from the 1st of July 2008. Government didn't like that. They're working with the opposition on a different alternative to, for a payment by the finance minister.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what it means is that the opposition has come leaps and bounds compared to where they were under Howard. They came out defending us more than what the government did.
Now, is this only affects Commonwealth super, doesn't it? This has nothing
correct.
To do with your own private or
private
industry.
Private still will be 1st of July 2008, and that's already in the bills, and the government had agreed to that bit.
Right. So, does this apply? This applies across the entire superannuation industry, then?
It does. However, for private super funds, they have to choose to opt into this. The Greens tried to move an amendment to say that it must be mandatory,
mm-hmm.
But given that the rest of the Act that regulates private super funds isn't mandatory, the government and the opposition didn't support their motion on it.
So if you've got any doubts at all, you need to get in touch with your superannuation fund to find out if they are, in fact, opted into this.
Yeah, give them about a month so they can get their paperwork into order and realise what they're doing, but absolutely give them a call. And if not, walk with your feet to a fund that does look after you properly.
Yeah, now the 68 Commonwealth laws, this omnibus thing.
Yeah, that bill has been started the debate in the Senate. It hasn't quite finished yet. There's probably still about an hour or an hour and a half to go when they come back in the week of the 24th.
Mm-hmm.
But fantastic progress. Looks like that has no problems. The government put their amendments up based on the committee's report. Opposition supporting their position. The Greens tried to move some amendments that unfortunately weren't successful.
Mm.
And it should go through hopefully that week of the 24th or very early as the second week. So we should have it all done this year, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Well, Steve Fielding wasn't very happy, was he?
Oh, Senator Fielding, I should say, was definitely not very happy, as was Senator Joyce, who felt this would be a way of breaking down the institution of marriage.
I'm getting tired of hearing that line, aren't you? I mean, it sounds...
Is that the only excuse they can come up with now?
Well, there's not a lot left because everybody seems to accept in Australian society that gay and lesbian relationships are no different from heterosexual relationships.
And, Corey, in terms of the legal situation, in fact, there's only really relationship recognition and adoption left, isn't there?
Oh, look, there's a few other things.
What about
we're heavily working on sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination laws at a federal level.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's relationship registers at a state level or at a federal level, and obviously marriage. There are a few other things, such as legal instruments that need to be fixed up. So where they're not actually controlled by an act of parliament, there might be a tribunal that's made a decision that needs to be reversed, etc., to treat same-sex couples the same as opposite-sex couples, and the government's indicated they'll look at that in 2009.
Mm. But it's pretty fair bet, though, to say that at the Australian government level, almost all forms of discrimination have been removed now.
I wouldn't use the word all, I would use the word majority.
Almost all,
Well, majority have been.
There's one big elephant in the room, of course, that they haven't changed the Marriage Act yet.
Interestingly, though, the other elephant in the room is this gender identity and sexual orientation discrimination. The government's removed discrimination, but they haven't actually legislated to protect gay and lesbian couples from being discriminated against.
Can you explain what the difference is there?
Yeah, sure. So if Centrelink did discriminate against you because you're a same-sex couple, there would be no legal course for you to go back to. So if they treated you inappropriately because you're gay, if the staff member was inappropriate in the way they dealt with you, then there's no anti-discrimination laws that you have at a state level. Therefore, any of those federal government agencies wouldn't be able to be reprimanded for doing so. So we just need to look at that and work with them. And there's a few issues the government is looking at before they do it. They haven't said no, they haven't said yes. Mm. They're just looking at it. So we'll be keeping the pressure on them to continue that discussion.
Yeah, because I saw an interview with, I think, Graham Innes, the Human Rights Commissioner, today, in which he was saying, you know, there's no overall anti-discrimination legislation in place. There's lots of bits and pieces at various state levels, but there's no kind of overarching federal structure for this, and he wants to see things moving in that direction.
Absolutely, and I fully support him in what he's saying, except to say that I don't think we need to wait a couple of years while Heriot decides how to implement this full equality bill. I think that we can do sexual orientation and gender identity sooner than that. So we'll be working with the government to say, look, we know you want to reform all the legislation, but while you're waiting and figuring out how you want to do that, let's talk about what's going to affect same-sex couples earlier.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why we shouldn't.
Well, I don't think you get anybody on this program saying no to that.
Although Robert Doyle's on soon, isn't he?
Well, not yet, though.
We're hoping he's going to be here. He should have been here about 5 minutes ago, so we're still kind of keeping our eye out. We might as well talk a little bit about the mayoral race, actually, while we're on here at the moment, because I got a little thing through my letterbox this morning. My partner has a vote in the mayoral election because he's company secretary of a business that's here in the city. And it was just a card with a picture of an empty office chair in it, labelled Catherine Ng. And on the back it said, the disappearing councillor. She's only attended X number of meetings in a year. No indication of where it came from, no indication of who popped it through the letterbox, you know. And we had another thing, we had an attack, I think it was from Peter McMullen, on Adam Bandt, saying the Greens are going to close down schools. Well, as far as I know, that had nothing at all to do with the mayor, does it?
Well, sort of, not only doesn't it have anything to do with Melbourne City Council, or indeed any council, it's actually not their position. So poor old Councillor Peter McMullen's been taking a few liberties there.
Mm.
Look, I think some of the mayoral candidates are a bit scared about the Greens ticket. They seem to have not preferenced the Greens anywhere across all the board of 12 people who are running, which is always a good sign that a particular candidate may be doing better than people want them to.
Well, Peter McMullen seems to be a kind of serial mayoral candidate, because he was a candidate here, then he didn't get in here, so he went off and he became mayor, I think, in Geelong.
Yep.
That's right. And there was some kind of scandal wafting around about him in Geelong last week.
And, of course, we also have our own favourite, Peter Singer, running as well. Well, you know...
Gary Singer.
No, Peter Singer's the ethicist. who, of course, has been very good to the station, very good to the gay community, so we're sport for choice a bit, aren't we?
Well, we are a bit, and of course we've got our very own Tim Wilson running alongside Peter McMullen, you know, the one we always refer to as secret love child of Malcolm Turnbull. If you've ever met Tim, you'd know why people say that.
This is Tim from the Institute of Public Affairs.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, is that right?
He's running his sidekick to Peter McMullen. Very odd ticket, that.
It's a bit of an odd couple, isn't it?
It's a very odd couple. Because
youth and experience.
Yes, and Labour and extremely liberal. Getting back to Canberra for a moment, just give us a quick sense of the timeline now. What happens next in May?
Parliament doesn't sit next week, and then they sit for 2 weeks following that. We expect that these bills will be passed during those 2 weeks. And then from the Parliament's perspective, they're done for this round of reform. Mm-hmm. It then moves to the government agencies to start ramping up their education campaign, explain to people what they need to do and how they want to do. Things like Centrelink will probably call for people to register themselves from the 30th of March.
Well, we'll be able to ask a representative of Centrelink, who's coming on the program later on, actually.
Hmm. And look, the most important thing for people to realise out there is that, yes, it can be scary, you're not sure what's going to happen, but give these people time to communicate with you, give them a call, talk to them, and they'll be able to let you know. We'll be helping through Joy as much as we can to get that information out there about when things change, like the pharmaceutical benefit scheme will change from 1 January 2009. Some tax things may happen from 1 March or 1 April, and the bulk of things will happen in 1 July 2009. So we'll be trying to keep you as much informed as we can.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Corey, and keep up the good work.
Thanks. a lot. See you later, guys.
That was Corey Earlham in Canberra. You're listening to Doug Pollard and guests on The Rainbow Report.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Informing, entertaining and provoking, this is The Rainbow Report.
Welcome back. This is The Rainbow Report with Doug Pollard, my studio guests tonight, Scott Bradford and Ron Thiel. Robert Doyle is running a wee bit late, but I believe we have on the line Mr. Hank Jorgen from Centrelink. Good evening, Hank.
Good evening.
Now, we've just been talking to Corey Earlham, a gay lobbyist up in Canberra, and he's saying that there's going to be a lot of changes coming through as a result of the changes that are happening up in Canberra. Can you tell us what Centrelink is doing about communicating these to the gay community?
Well, look, of course, we're in a situation where we want to get on the front foot so that once the legislation's passed, we're in a position where we can start the communication process. And we also need to be aware of some of the sensitivities to ensure and also have a better understanding of how to target the gay and lesbian community to enable us to get the messaging we need to through to as much a broader section of the community as we possibly can. And I have to say as well, we're also doing this research because it's clear to us that as part of our staff training, we need to do some sensitivity training, generate awareness of some of the issues that are going to be involved, so that we can make a smooth transition when the legislation is introduced, as we anticipate to take effect in July next year.
Now, we've been reading a couple of stories, slightly scary stories in the press of late about a couple of elderly gay men were told their pensions might be cut as part of these reforms because they couldn't prove whether they were or weren't in a relationship and all that sort of thing. Isn't that kind of, if that's happening now, isn't that kind of jumping the gun a bit?
Yes, it is. And in fact, look, I'm aware that there was a story that ran in the Sydney Star Observer, and we've been trying to track down the couple that were involved in that, and I'm very keen to talk to them because the information they were given was incorrect. It's certainly whatever advice they got from our staff was peremptory. The legislation's not through,
yeah.
And even if the when the legislation goes through, the intention is that the changes won't take effect until the 1st of July in 2009.
Yeah, yeah. So people don't have to start panicking.
No. And look, there'll be a lot of information available about this. We're already working closely with a community reference group, which involves representatives from, organisations like the New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, the Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria, Positive Life New South Wales, National Welfare Rights Network. We're very keen to ensure that when these changes are made, we deal with them appropriately, that our staff are sensitised to the issues, and that we manage it as effectively as we possibly can.
Now, you're undertaking some research right now, aren't you, in conjunction, for example, with the ALSO Foundation, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
You're conducting focus groups to get some feedback from the community.
Yep.
So if people want to know about that, of course, they can always get onto the ALSO Foundation website, and I'm sure there's information there, or give the ALSO Foundation a call.
Can I just say, though, that the market research company that we've appointed already has sufficient volunteers.
They do.
Right across the board. What I'd like to do is to encourage people who have any concerns, ideas, or feedback to actually write to me directly. My email address is very simple.
Yeah.
It's hank@centrelink.gov.au. No need to bother with the surname. It's just simply hank@centrelink.gov.au.
Now, that is that H-E-N-K or H-A-N-K?
Sorry, H-A-N-K.
H-A-N-K.
It should be E, but I've anglicised it.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds Dutch, Henk Jongen.
Yes, it is.
having lived in Amsterdam for a few years, I've sensitised to that. So that's hank@centrelink.gov.
Gov.au.
.au, with any concerns that they may have. Well, that's good. One question I wanted to ask you, you probably can't answer this at this point because the legislation hasn't actually gone through, but it's a really moot point as to how do you decide who is a couple and who isn't?
Well, look, basically what the laws do is remove discrimination, mm-hmm. which means that the same rules that currently apply to opposite-sex couples will apply to same-sex couples. And what that means is that it will require us to conduct interviews in the same way as we currently do with opposite-sex couples. And basically the information that we then take into account is really based on a set of rules that are currently set out in legislation, and the sort of factors are the financial aspects of the relationship, the nature of the household, the social aspects of the relationship, the presence or absence of the sexual relationship, and the nature of the commitment between two people. As you can imagine, this is an area that is extremely difficult for us to manage even at this point in time. There's no shying away from that. We are required to ask intrusive questions. We do that. We are experienced in doing that, and we do it with a high degree of sensitivity at present. But there are other implications, as I'm sure you understand, in relation to doing this in relation to same-sex couples.
And so, Hank, can I just ask if somebody comes along with a certificate issued by the state government to say that they're in a relationship, you know, i.e. the relationship register, does that short-circuit that process?
Yes, it does.
What, completely?
Sorry, I should say, under the current intentions, it certainly
sorry,
does.
Sorry, yeah.
Because, of course, the legislation's not through yet.
Okay, I've got a couple of questions coming in from listeners on the SMS here. Sally says she wants to know how these changes are going to affect trans or intersex people, and what she wants to know is if Centrelink will cease recording the sex and gender of people on their database now that it's no longer necessary with regard to relationships.
Well, look, these are the very issues that we are currently considering as we lead up to the introduction of the legislation. Look, to be really honest, I can't answer that question now. But look, you know, as the legislation goes through and as we get closer to implementation, can I just assure you, I'm more than happy to come back on your program and actually answer some of those more detailed questions.
Well, that would be great, yeah, because I've actually got a couple of questions that relate to the particular status of the trans and intersex community.
Sure.
Because, you know, this is a very sensitive area for them indeed. I guess really there's not a lot of detail thing you can tell us at the moment because, as I say, the law itself hasn't passed, but we will get back to you as soon as the law does, and maybe even perhaps get you into the studio and do a whole show about this.
Oh, look, I'd be more than happy to, you know, we could really canvass all of the rules. Let me just once again, you know, provide assurance. We're already aware of many of the sensitivities and essentially we need to increase our knowledge. You know, for example, there's people living in small rural communities. What impact does it have on them? Young gays who have not come out to their parents who may be in a relationship. All of these issues we understand we're going to need to have to address.
Right. And if people want reassurance or just want to get in touch with you or provide you with information, the address is hank@centrelink.gov.au.
That's right.
Okay, thanks very much for your time tonight, Hank.
Pleasure.
And we'll speak to you again soon, I'm sure. That was Hank Jorgen from Centrelink, and as I said, the address to get in touch with him if you've got any questions about what Centrelink is going to do with regard to benefits for same-sex couples once these law changes come through, hank@centrelink.gov.au.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
Informing, entertaining and provoking, this is The Rainbow Report.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report and I'm very happy to welcome to the studio Robert Doyle. Good evening, Robert.
Hello, Doug. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I couldn't be better. That's good. Surprising, isn't it?
Well, you know...
It's a bit worrying, really.
Well, the Herald Sun was saying that you were just kind of like happily coasting along and not campaigning.
Like,
so
Juno saying unkind things about me? Can such things be true? Surely not.
Oh, well, you know, they've said a lot of unkind things about a lot of people. They said some very unkind things about one of your former colleagues, Andrew Alexander, a while back, I seem to remember.
But could I pass on all of that, please? can we move along very quickly?
I think we can. That's a good piece of the past there. Basically, I'd like to start by asking you to give us an outline of like why you're running for mayor and what do you think you've got to offer the city?
Well, let me tell you, it took me a bit to decide that I did want to run. Mm-hmm. I've been in public life before, as you may remember, and it didn't end all that happily. Mm-hmm. So I had to really decide, did I have something that I can offer the city if I'm going to put my hand up again? Because you need to be pretty thick-skinned to go back into public life. The first thing, Doug, was I thought, yeah, look, I looked at the city and I thought, it's a great place. You know, we all love living here. It's a vibrant city, but there is so much more we could do. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I don't want to go into politics again, that sort of infantile, head-butting, red and blue stuff. I want to go into something where I can make decisions, do things, you know, make a difference to the community, whether that's in bringing services or it's having a vision for where we want to go, all those sorts of things. I also thought to myself, look, we're actually headed into pretty tough times. I think a lot of your listeners would have already noticed that in their businesses and in their lives.
Too true.
Over the last year at the Royal Melbourne, which I'm chairman of, that's exactly what we've done. We watched every single dollar, but we had to continue delivering services at the very highest level. And that's what I can bring to the City of Melbourne. So I thought, I do have a contribution to make. I'm prepared to put up with the worst bits of public life, and they are terrible. but it's worth it. It's worth it if you can actually do things.
Now, the position of mayor in Melbourne is a rather a strange office, really, because it's sort of, in fact, the whole city council thing is rather has a rather limited set of powers compared to what you would find in a major conurbation elsewhere. For example, somewhere like Brisbane, for example, which covers the whole of the catchment area, I think.
Yeah, but then you have to live in Brisbane. I mean, there's always a downside, isn't there?
Yeah, but I mean. Isn't the job of mayor here in Melbourne as much about persuasion and a bit of what I might call a bully pulpit as much as it is about actually doing things?
I think you've hit it on the head. I think it's about influence. I mean, there's no doubt the state government has stripped away powers, planning powers, those sorts of things, a number of the services. Look, there are still the key services you have to deliver. I mean, we're responsible for communities, whether they live in the city or the inner city. You know, they are communities of people that live just as they do in, you know, the far-flung suburbs of Melbourne. So there are services to them. But yes, it's a matter of knowing when to work with state government and when to stand up to them. And I think I've got a track record of both.
Now, to come on to the slightly vexed question, because I've got a couple of emails in here of your relationship with the gay community, which hasn't actually always been of the kind of the warmest at times in the past, if I can say. We've got Graham from Bundoora says, he can't remember if it was you, and he's happy if you want to deny it, but he said the Liberal leader at the time of Christine Nixon's march at Pride was saying he couldn't understand why she was marching with these people instead of arresting them.
No, that wasn't,
that wasn't you, was it? I didn't think it was. So I'm happy to put that one to rest.
Thank you.
You did get cosy at one time with the Catch the Fire Ministries. I think they came and laid their hands on you and prayed for you to win the election, didn't they?
Well, Doug, if I asked you, you'd come and lay on hands and pray for me, wouldn't you? Yeah, you thought you were asking the vexed questions, didn't you?
I'll pass on that one. I'm glad you qualified that.
The serious thing is,
The serious question behind that is that, you know, there was a lot of kind of cozying up between John Howard, for example, and the Exclusive Brethren, and then getting all sorts of perks through that kind of close relationship. And I think the question behind this is, do you have any of those kind of agendas?
No perks, but I will meet with any legitimate community group. There is one exception, and I've made that exception all of my political life. I have never met with Right to Life, and that is for very straightforward personal reasons.
Ron, you want to come in here?
Yes, I mean, you know, in terms of the gay community, Robert, I think that the hard and pointy end of this is that Melbourne City Council has actually been quite good to us. I mean, we're sitting in a building right now, you know, which has been provided with substantial support. They're one of the long-term supporters of the Midsummer Festival, and they're also
one of the people, sort of one of the first local governments to get into action with a relationships register as well. Do you have a position on those three things?
I mean, I think they're great initiatives. I think this is a very good use of a city-owned building. I'd like to see it more used in this way. And the city does have infrastructure around a place that can be put to really good community use. I'd much rather see them being used for that and supported rather than just sitting empty. I mean, that's just a waste. So I like the community use of community infrastructure. So if you're saying, am I going to continue to support, the answer is yes.
I think, you know, sort of what I'm really asking is that, as I said, the council has been a proactive supporter of, yep, you know, the gay community, and like, you know, accepting initiatives which already exist, and you know, of course, not opposing them is one thing. But do you think that we could expect the same degree of proactivity from yourself?
Oh, I'm sure you could. And I'm sure there are other things that we can do. I was surprised when Doug said that. That's a bit of a surprise to me about my relationship with the gay community. But, I mean, the one thing that I'm... one of the things I'm very proud of in government was that we were looking for some headquarters for people living with HIV, living with AIDS. And I was the one who negotiated with the ministers at the time the old Braille and Talking Book Library. Mm-hmm. And to the present government's credit, you know, we started that and the ball was well and truly rolling. But I worked extensively with the gay community in finding an appropriate place, and we decided the grounds of the Alfred Hospital, you know, for all sorts of reasons, were not appropriate. A co-location there, I think, might have, you know, been a little too sensitive. So we found that very substantial and very important building, and I think it's, you know, it's been a great success.
Because, of course, like, you know, from our point of view, all we want to avoid is another right winger that we have to spend effort and energy reconstructing. So we've
been enormously successful so far.
Great to hear that you're not in that camp.
Well, I think people in my party, and you know I'm a member of a political party, I don't think that's a secret.
We've heard about them.
Thank you. I don't think anyone would describe me in my party as being on the right wing of my party, let me tell you.
So you mentioned before that you've got political aspirations and you want to continue doing that. Do you think having that fire in your belly makes you best poised to be a better candidate?
I'm not sure about that. I've seen already a lot of negative campaigning in this mayoral race, and that really disappoints me.
Yeah, I was saying earlier on, I got a couple of rather nasty leaflets through my letterbox. It was a picture of an empty chair with Catherine Ng's name on it and things like that.
I just think that's inappropriate. And look, we've decided in our team that we're not going to do that. We're not going to be bagging other candidates. We're not going to be bagging other campaigns. You know, let them offer what they will to the people. We'll do the same thing. And my messages are going to be positive. So, I mean, that's a personal choice. I've been through all that stuff. You know, I don't need that stuff again.
You have.
You have.
Indeed.
You may recall.
We remember.
If only all the wounds were from the front, you know.
Yeah. Now, just to get off the gay thing specifically here, all the candidates have talked a great deal about... Well, I think they're all actually interrelated issues, which are to do with city safety, city transport, and the alcohol problem we have in the city. What's your take on that little bundle of things?
Well, first of all, let me make one thing really clear, because I do come from a political background. If there's one thing I can't stand in a campaign, it's people who promise what they can't possibly deliver. Mm. Now, a lot of those things are outside the possibility of council to deliver. I mean, even the police minister can't say we're going to put an extra 100 police into the city. Mm-hmm. They don't have that power. Mm-hmm. You have got a power of influence. You know, you can say, for instance, and I would say, look, for a start, we used to have those young constables who, when they finished their training, came in to do some traffic work, and for a month they just wander around. You know, a bit of deterrence. And that sort of thing, where you can bring more police, show them how they might give us a greater police presence. You might provide infrastructure. You know, why wouldn't we offer, for instance, one of the city buildings you were talking before on about this building being community use? Why wouldn't we offer a council building as a police station? And say, we'll put it right in the right spot for you. We'll actually provide the building. You provide the police. So that's the thing. But the third thing before we get back to that is, I don't think these lockouts are a great idea. I think it's about targeting the venue. And that's got to be a partnership between the council, the Liquor Licensing Commission, and the police. And what you actually say is, look, you have a license. We're going to expect that you comply with that license. And if you don't, I believe they should use it. And we do have a community responsibility to provide safe streets outside the venues. The one thing, I mean, I have at the Royal Melbourne, I was today with Paul DeWart, the young bloke, remember, who was shot, the backpacker.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back to say thank you to the hospital people who saved his life. Now, that's not how I think of our city. you know, gunshots from a hardened criminal, a man killed and two people very seriously injured. I met that young man today. I've stood at the foot of the bed of the young bloke who was hit over the back of the head with a bottle in Bed Square, just having a good time with his mates, not offending anybody. That young man is now in a vegetative state and he'll never wake up. You know, so I've seen the really pointy end of it, and I think it is about partly that management by visible policing, not heavying people and doing that sort of stuff, but visible policing plus getting inside the venues and making them comply with their licences.
While we're on that particular topic, I just wanted to bring in that, you know, a couple of candidates have talked about safety at taxi ranks, safety on late-night transport, getting more late-night transport together. Catherine Ng actually talked about hiring a whole load of people to be what I think she calls city ambassadors.
I can tell you there are examples of where they're laughed at. They're called toy soldiers up in Rockhampton. Mm. You know, you can't dress them in sort of brightly coloured T-shirts and expect them to do the job of the police. That's where we've got to actually, and we can't promise extra late night transport. You can't promise extra police because they are not the responsibilities of council. You can influence, you can argue for it, you can persuade, and if they won't do it, you can get out there and scream from the treetops and shame them into it. But no one can promise that. I don't believe in vigilante groups or toy soldiers. We've been through some pretty prosperous times. We're going into some pretty desperate times, and people are going to need the services more, not less.
Yeah.
And therefore, we're going to need someone who can actually deliver on that.
Mm. Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there because we're running a bit low on time. But thank you very much for your time tonight, Robert.
I hope you'll have me back again.
That was Robert Doyle, who, as we just said, could well be our next mayor. After the heady heights of local councils, city mayors and Canberra senators, we come to our own vote, the vote for the Also Awards. That's much more important to that mega brain that lurks beneath the bonnet of Miss Case Ra.
It's awards time again, and I'm fluffing up the dew and sharpening the repartee. The latter is proving far more challenging than the former. Funny thing, the old accolade. Rarely are they staged without a good dose of gossip and speculation. And for every person lucky enough to win, there are at least 100 or so who deserve the recognition. It's the tip of the iceberg theory. The pretty bit peeking out of the waves is nothing compared to the great mass of ice that rips open the hull of the Titanic under the surface. This week's blurb is dedicated to that great mass. To understand the measure of rejection you feel when you don't, or worse, when you aren't even nominated, we need to understand a few of the formats of awards nights. Top of the heap are the Oscars, which are not so much about the accolade, but rather prime time promotion. Why else do you think the media are more interested in the skinny white trash in perversely overpriced frocks on the red carpet than the actual awards themselves? 1 billion-odd viewers worldwide? Hell yes, I want the bitch to mention the label. Further down the celebrity scale and closer to home is that monstrosity called the Logies. And while they may not boast the budget and star power of the Oscars, they at least acknowledge the red carpet business for what it really is. A catwalk of designer egos. In fact, no one really cares if you watch the Logies presentation or not, so long as you remain glued to the screen for the arrivals. Smart people, the Logies folk. They know the main course is crap, so they just focus on the entree. The blokes have tried to muscle in on the accolade action as well with the dreaded Brownlows. Let me say up front, I have nothing against football, as if grown men want to spend their lives sweating over red pigskin, all power to them. But when they put on a tux and smile at the cameras and fluff around their trophy girlfriends like they give a damn, well, that's just wrong. Some funny bugger in AFL marketing is having a terrible laugh at our expense. You can dumb down the awards as much as you like. Nothing is going to drag these brutes into civilization. Their hearts just aren't in it, which is probably why they spend most of the night clearing out their sinuses in the toilets. In the queer scene, we've had a bash at our own awards nights too. It's been called many things, the Rainbows, the Pride Awards, the Divas. This time round, it's called the Also Awards, named after the Also Foundation. That's the organisation daring enough to take them on. I say daring because I've had a little bit of experience in producing this juggernaut, and let me tell you, it ain't a walk in the park. Actually, I think I may have even picked up a couple of the little buggers myself, and I'd be lying if I said that winning an award didn't give me a warm, fuzzy feeling. It's just a pity we can't give that very same feeling to everybody. God knows more than a few deserve it. And it's a huge pity our awards nights tend to divide us up as a community rather than bring us together. Maybe it's that old chestnut of community versus the commercial scene. Maybe it's the drag queens. Yes, I'm sure that's it. Those skanky drag queens never support an event unless it's all about them. It's not like drag is completely devoid of ego. I'm Kay Sarar, and I can't decide whether to wear floral or sequins to the All So Awards.
Okay, sing along now. That's it for this week. Thanks to my guests tonight, Robert Doyle, Hank Jongens, Dale Smedley and Corey Erlen, plus, of course, our Rainbow regulars here in the studio, Ron Thiel and Scott Bradford. Thanks to my very hard-working producer, Bianca. Technical producer Michael, however, caught my cold, so he is indisposed, and Travis has been flying the desk for us tonight. Thank you very much, Travis. And, of course, there's always the blog at rainbowreporter.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.